kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Next game to talk about is called God damn it. My thing scrolled down.
So you forgot the name of the game?
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It's been a crazy weekend after all the E3 news, so we're going to tone things down with just a couple of reviews this episode. Going to be one of the usual early week shows with people joining in and out, and we're going to kick things off with Pernell joining back. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Rainy day, but I made the best of it by eating vegetables. I don't know how the hell that works, but hey, when you need something, you make it best, make it whatever it needs to be. So
I like how I'm at the point where I don't even feel I need to say your last name because everyone knows who you are by now.
They probably do. It's like, that loud guy's back? Oh, shit. That's pretty awesome.
Before we dive into the reviews, I know you were only able to join us for part of the E3 show. Was there anything else from E3 that interested you that you want to talk about?
Unfortunately not, because my problem is that this year in particular, I just kind of sucked at the following. Like, I think the landscape for me has changed a lot, both in the sense that most of the big news that I want to hear about comes from like smaller companies, and they typically don't pop in E3. Like, for example, my two most anticipated releases this year are Tokyo Xanadu and Ease 8. And you wouldn't hear anything about them at E3 this year because why would you? Their publishers wouldn't go there. and also, a lot of the bigger releases get announced throughout the year because websites need to keep making their hits. So when you get to E3, it usually ends up being like, things like, you know, I know some people were excited for some. I'm not, you know, disparaging them, but like, you get like, here's Shadow of the Colossus again. It's like, you know, I don't care about that. You know, this is something that you should have announced on a website and save that other big reveal for later. But for the most part, it's not a great deal. I was really chasing E3. It's just more like, what's coming out this week? Oh shit! Like, I think about it, there's one thing that came up due to E3, but I'm not sure if it was at the show or if it was just press that came up during the week. But there's two Kunio-kun games coming out. One's coming out this week, and it's called something like Medieval something, where it's like all the Kunio-kun characters in like in a medieval environment with swords and shit. And then there's another one coming out towards like the fall that's more of their traditional beat 'em up style. So
I didn't even notice those two getting announced. I've been focused on E3 for the past week and a half or so that all other news has just flown by me.
Yeah, that's what throws me off. Like with E3, it's like I used to be all like, I can't wait, what's going to happen at E3? Now I'm like, it'll show up later. I'll be excited for I was excited for the Mario Odyssey and the seeing that the Rabbids game actually doesn't look like a crop of shit like a lot of people were anticipating it would. So I'm happy about that. But even still, both of those games were games that I already knew were coming and almost didn't even need a sales pitch at this point. I was like the Mario Rabbids thing, yeah, because that's a weird product. I don't know what the hell it is. But the Mario Odyssey game, I don't think Nintendo's really ever screwed up a traditional Mario game. There might have been some less favored ones and more beloved ones, but they've never outrightly ruined one. So it's like, hey, we've got Mario Odyssey coming out. I'm like, all right, I'm buying that. it's not even, you need to show me your product. It's like, I've been playing Mario since 1987 or so. I think I can expect this to be good. So I'm already going to get it. So that's pretty much where I am with E3, which is why, like, if you notice, when we were talking on the episode, almost everything you announced was a surprise to me. I was like, oh, shit, for real? Everything was new to me. So I just write like that. So it actually also kind of makes certain things more enticing, like when it shows up out of nowhere. It's like, oh, my God, that game's out Thursday? Okay. I got to go get that now. Or on Thursday, whichever. But that's pretty much how I tend to roll with the E3 goods.
Yeah. Well, if you ever need a recap of all the things that happen on E3, make sure to go check out episode 288 of the SML podcast.
What's that episode again?
288.
Oh, man. Don't mind.
Nearly 4 hours of E3 goodness all wrapped up into one incredibly long and hard to listen to episode.
You're probably going to have been doing like what I was thinking about doing. I'm like, nah, that's basically just gotta dive in and listen and spot what you want to spot. But yeah, I probably will have to do that. That way, it's like a nice, concise thing, especially since you took all the notes and whatnot. You'll Indeed. Likely cover every individual bit from the main guy. So
we did. I think we went in depth in nearly every single thing that was talked about during the press conferences, except for like Call of Duty and Destiny, because fuck those games.
Here, freaking here to that. I got friends out the wazoo trying to get me to get back on Destiny. I bought the damn game twice, actually. I bought the first day it came out and returned it because like, I haven't played it. I haven't booted it up. I'm just going to get my money back. Then I purchased it again for the PS4 with the Taken King expansion because everybody talked it up like it was like the best thing ever. And I have tons of friends that still play it. So my thought was, you know, I want to play more games socially. I can get online with them and play Destiny and just hang out. But the game did not entice me at all. There was nothing about it that made me say, I got to come back and play this. Like, I started playing WoW for the social aspect, and though I wasn't fully entrenched in it, it had enough going for it that I liked it and was able to stick with it. Destiny had nothing like that. It bored me every step of the freaking way. I don't know what people see in it, but I'm not going to tell them they like bad games, whatever. Just, it's not for Pern, that's all.
I can understand the people who like it, the people who don't like it, whatever. My gripe is still with the marketing deal with PlayStation and how much content is cut out of the Xbox version of the game.
Wait, for real? I knew that they had timed exclusives.
Yeah, there's like a PvP map is exclusive ship, exclusive weapon, exclusive outfits, an exclusive strike, and the strikes are a huge part of the game.
Yeah, that I don't like so much. I thought it was just like temporary time release to say, like, you know, get it first over here.
No, and get it first, that's at least 1 year.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's some pretty sneaky marketing in and of itself. I can't outright knock them for that. Because it's smart, but I don't like the fact that they have to.
It's absolute bullshit. Even PlayStation players are pissed off with it because, like, that exclusive strike will never be in the rotation for, like, the weekly special events that go on because not everyone has access to it.
Wait, I can't remember. Is the game cross-play?
No.
Oh, okay. Because I was about to say, like, if it's cross-play, I figure why, but why wouldn't they at least put it in the rotation if they get, I mean, if it's like system barred at least.
Because I'm sure it's easier to just have a consistent set of what's going on server wise. It's, you know, servers won't mix, but just so it's consistent across all the servers instead of, oh, well, we did this over on this platform, but not on this platform. We're going to have to go back, see what we did over here. Did we do this one over here? Did we do this over there? So just to keep everything the same. But if they're worried about keeping everything the same, don't cut out a fifth of the game for a fucking year.
Yeah, that I agree with. That makes perfect sense, and it's kind of dumb. Especially if it's ruining how people can interact with the online components and the different events that they program in.
But yeah, I just the way Sony and Activision have gone about this shit with the Destiny deal just ensures I will never drop a penny on that game again.
If it makes you feel any better, it's a shitty game, so there you go.
And I'm over here with my friggin' Dinklebot from the first game collector edition sitting on my shelf.
Well, at least you did keep Dinklebot.
What a disappointment.
That damn game.
Speaking of disappointing collector editions, you mentioned the game Tokyo Xanadu. What are your thoughts on the collector editions that they're doing for that game?
It's hard to say. It's one of those. I think right now I'm in those one of those positions where it's like I'm just going to get it because I'm a Falcom dork, so I'll just bite down. But
the idea. Are you doing just the game, or are you doing the collector's edition?
No, I got the CE. It's funny actually because I've been trying to I'm distancing myself from most of the collector's editions of games because they cost so much money when you're on a budget, and it you know, they're all oddly shaped and take up too much shelf space. You know, the chat we had with CJ, but mine actually makes fucking sense. But in addition to that, but when it comes to that, the thing I kind of make an exception for Falcon because that's my baby. But I don't know who the hell White Shroud is. He was a guy they added apparently to the PS4 edition as a playable character. I'm not sure if he was in the original game as a character at least. So the statue has no feeling to me. Like, I'm hoping that by the end of the game, I'm like, oh, White Shroud's cool. I'm glad he came with my game. But for the most part, I'm not even really sweating it. It's just more like, it's just a bunch of stuff, and the price is like $150 or something.
Yeah, $150 for the PS4 edition. So I'm guessing you're going with the PS4 version.
Yeah, it's one of those things like, because I don't know what, I think Falcom just does it on a regular because they did it with Ease too, but with the PS4 version, they added more content, added more characters, and a post-game, all kinds of shit. So at that point, I can't in good faith with my money say I'm going to buy the Vita version, even though originally I was going to get the Vita version because it's cheaper and it's portable. But yeah. Apparently also I heard that they think they did a much better job with the frame rate on the PS4 too, which while I'm not typically a tech junkie or anything like that, I feel like frame rate drops in action-related games make a big deal or make a big difference. So
I just, I'm a whore for collector's editions, but the stuff that's included in that PS4 edition for the price that they're asking, especially when you compare it to the Vita Collector Edition.
Because the Vita is the same stuff, with the exception is being that weird, like, little, instead of the statue, it's a little puppet man.
Yeah, instead of a 9-inch deluxe White Shroud figurine, it's a 5-inch deluxe Moramaru plush, if I said that right. The thing is, the PS4 version is $150. The Vita version is $70.
It makes you wonder, like, what's so special about this White Shroud statue? Because I'm betting that's where they try to justify the cost. It's like, the statue's higher quality, blah, blah, blah.
I know, a 9-inch figure for that much of a price difference. I would probably just go with the Vita version, and if the game was really good, just buy the standard PS4 version separately.
Honestly, that's still an option in reality, but my only concern and why I'm not sure about doing that is the fact that I suck at replaying games. So I can see myself buying the Vita version, playing through it, and like, yes, this game was really good, and then get the PS4 version with all the bonus content. Like, well, that's going to just sit on the shelf. Like, Persona Fez, Persona Golden, the eventual Persona 5, you know, Breakout of Prison Edition, you know, it's all going to... They all have the same effect on me. I get them because I want to play them, thinking all this cool new stuff, and I remember that, oh, shit, the game took me 150 hours the first time. I don't have that much time in my life to contribute to the game again because now they go to the beach in January. It's like I got nothing.
So. Or even you could get the Vita Collector Edition and the standard version of the game and just pretend that you bought the PS4 edition and it came with a free copy of the Vita game, and it's still cheaper than the PS4 Collector Edition because that, like, the figure does nothing for me. It doesn't even look that cool to me. I don't know. Yeah.
You got me thinking about that now. Like, that might be something you even just do just for the hell of it. Because just I agree. Because
you still get the art book, you still get the soundtrack, you still get the cards, you get the game.
The only difference is the statue versus the plush.
Yeah.
Ain't that some shit? I'll double back and check that. But yeah, I agree with you. I definitely looked at that edition and was like, I'm not sure how I feel about this. Like, I'm not really ecstatic for it versus any way or the other. It's like, it's just some stuff. So... But now you got me thinking about this, so that might be something I end up doing, like, to wake up tomorrow. I was like, God, change that edition!
True, but fucking East 8, man, I am on board for that one.
Oh, yes.
I'm ready. The only East games I haven't beaten that I've played, mind you, are East 4, and that's because I didn't have the translated edition back then. I still need to get around to playing that, now that I got my duo fixed. East 6... because that was during the period where I just had too much shit and never went back. I replayed the beginning of the game like 3 times. And Ease Origins, because I was playing it on Steam. And even though I don't usually care about achievements and stuff on Steam, for some reason with this game I did. And one of the things that they had you do was beat a non-winning boss on your first time. Like, you're supposed to lose to him, but if you're really good, you can beat him. And I was playing on the hardest difficulty, unlocked from the start, mind you. I didn't even play on Night. And I got to this boss, and he killed me in like one fucking hit, and it took me, I was chipping at him. I was like, you know, I could do this. 2 hours, I was like, fuck this game, I'm done. I'm not doing this. And you had to say, Tom, I didn't want to lose to him, so I just hit a roadblock and stopped. So, but now it's coming to the Vita, and I'm going to have it on there. I'm going to try again, and maybe I'll be smart enough to not make that mistake again. Or, heaven forbid, play through the game a second time, since unlike, you know, Persona and stuff, this is a short game. Just play through it again on easy and beat the guy and get the damn trophy that way.
Very true. I'm excited it's coming to Vita as well. I know, I think Chris Taylor reviewed the PS4 version of the game, so...
The only sad part about it, which is also just like with the Falcom game, or just like with Xanadu, they're changing this content differences between the two because it's like, well, the PS4 is the enhanced edition, and the Vita version was the one we originally coded it for. I hate when companies do that sometimes. It's like, I get it. You want to re-release the game to a wider audience, but you got to entice people. So here's some more shit. Like, okay, here's a thought. Just accept the fact that people already bought it, and you're just going to sell it to people who, you know, didn't have a chance to buy it before. Don't add new shit. Or heaven forbid, if you add new stuff, add it to the other game as DLC that you get for free. Something like that. But don't make me go, well, if I want to play this extra stuff, I got to rebuy the entire game because they fucked me. That's pretty much where I feel about that half the time. It drives me nuts when companies do it. And just in this case with these, though, Japan got the Rear Admiral, not us. We get to choose between them right off the spec. So. Yeah. I'm going to die right in, but when it happens over here, I get angry. It's like, yeah, are you fucking kidding me? I just bought that thing 3 months ago. NIS is big on that shit. NIS is really big on that. They'll release a, what was it? That Stranger of Sword City game was an example. That might not even have been NIS, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, Stranger of Sword City came out with a collector's edition. I bought that, started dabbling with it, and was enjoying it. And then what do you know? Barely a year later, Stranger of Sword City expanded or some bullshit.
You want to know what pissed me off about Stranger of Sword City? Is that NIS didn't release it on Xbox in America.
No, they did. It just
No, it, they it, didn't.
Wait, so that
Experience demo- Experience oh, the developers self-published the Xbox version because NIS wouldn't release it.
I did not know that. Yeah. That's kind of lame, actually.
Yeah, that's one of my... I love NIS. I love the games they put out. I wish they would support Xbox, and they don't. Even on games that were made for Xbox, like... God, what the fuck was it? One of the visual novels, Psycho Break, is coming out on Xbox, or on PS4, PS Vita, whatever else. And it was originally an Xbox game in Japan. So they're releasing it on other platforms, but not the original platform.
They're releasing the ports.
Yeah.
That's kind of lame, especially when they already did the translation work and they don't have to sell physical copies of it.
Yeah. I don't know why NIS is so against putting their games on. I don't know if they feel that it's not worth the investment to do it, but... Fuck, if Experience would self-publish the game and sell it on Xbox, why can't NIS just be like, oh, yeah, I guess we'll do it?
Because I can tell you now, if I didn't have a Vita to get that physical, I would have bought it on the Xbox One because I downloaded the demo for it to try it any fucking way.
Yeah.
And I already had the game coming in the mail.
Fun thing, we actually covered it as part of when we were still on Bleeding Cool. And it was because I won a contest for the game.
Oh, so you won the game, you won the download for it on Xbox One?
As well as like a silk poster and an art book and some cool stuff.
Hopefully that your end result was buy this bitch right now.
Oh, it was definitely a buy it.
Oh, yeah, it's making sure, man. I'm like, what are you talking about? How is this not a buy it?
It was a really good game and, you know, we got to support RPGs on Xbox.
Oh, yeah. Especially ones like what you just described where the freaking developer actually self-published it. It's like, look, we know these guys are hurting for some RPGs, and it exists. We should just put it there.
So, Purnell, you should buy it on Xbox.
If I wasn't already an owner of the game, I probably would, or heaven forbid, they put remastered on there. Can't double dip.
But speaking of reviews, we have a couple to get to this episode. I'm going to kick off with one, and then you're going to hang out and do one yourself, correct?
Sounds like a good deal to me. At least that's what I think I'm doing.
We'll take it as it comes. But we're going to kick things off with Cars 3, Driven to Win. Yes, we are covering Disney and Pixar's Cars 3, Driven to Win, developed by Avalanche Software, published by Warner Brothers Interactive, Released June 13th on Xbox One, PS4, and Switch for $59.99. Xbox 360, PS3, and Wii U for $49.99. Start your engines and gear up for the ultimate racing experience in Cars 3, Driven to Win, inspired by Disney and Pixar's film Cars 3. Shocking, right? play with over 20 customizable characters and over 20 tracks set in iconic locations from the film. Train and advance your abilities in 6 game modes and challenge your family and friends in battle race to become the ultimate champion. On the road to becoming a Hall of Fame driver, training and skill will give you an edge in a race that anyone can win. This is a really, really fun game. I've had a lot of fun with the Cars games over the years. They've always been kind of a guilty pleasure of mine, and it's cool to see not only Avalanche Software resurrected from the grave after Disney shut them down, but the game being published by Warner Brothers, I thought was interesting as well.
Side note, I'm sorry I just kind of diverged on that, but for those not in the know, Avalanche is one of Disney's studios when they were an actual, when they actually had a publishing setup and development setup, rather. So, what were some of the games that Avalanche did when they were with Disney, aside from, I'm guessing, the other Cars titles?
It was basically a lot of Disney stuff. Like, they did the Disney Infinity games, they did Toy Story 3, Meet the Robinsons, Bolt, Hannah Montana, which everybody loves.
I love her!
And then before that, they did like a whole bunch of independent, like for hire work with like ports of Mortal Kombat games and licensed stuff like Tak and Juju and Rugrats and shit like that.
Okay.
So they've had a long history, and they were shut down by Disney in May of last year.
After the whole, they were like, Infinity's no longer profitable. Yeah. Shut it all down. They just ran through with a hatchet and cut everybody down.
Yeah, and then back in January, Warner Brothers announced that not only did they acquire the studio from Disney and reopened it, but they were going to start publishing Disney games, which I thought was a cool partnership. And I'm happy it happened because I enjoyed the other Cars games that were released. They were never like crazy deep, super over. Like, they were never going to be Forza.
Yeah, and they're not supposed to be Forza. You know, they're their own thing.
But they were always really solid, enjoyable, licensed Disney games. And I was excited to see Cars 3 coming out. The game has a handful of different modes to it. It starts off with a lot of the content locked because they want you to play to unlock other. It's never anything crazy like you have to beat 50 different races to unlock the next mode. But it's like, do a race in this mode and you'll unlock this mode. Do a race in that mode and you'll unlock the next one. So it's a constant kind of like drip feed of content to keep you trying everything the game has to offer instead of just playing what you want.
I kind of actually like modes like that because it allows you to kind of embrace what's there and the off chance that you normally wouldn't have played it. And all of a sudden, like, you know, in the second thought, this is actually pretty cool. I'm glad I had a chance to try this.
Yeah, so of course they have standard racing, which, you know, 10 vehicles racing around a track, 3 laps, see who wins. You have turbo boosts that you could earn through, like, drifting, or they have weird stuff like driving in reverse. Like, you hit down on the D-pad and your car just turns around, and then you have to steer in reverse, but it builds your turbo gauge.
That's pretty interesting.
Or driving on 2 wheels. If you hit up on the D-pad, your car just hops onto 2 wheels. It makes turning a bit tougher, but there's no real detriment to doing it. Like, if someone bumps into you, you just go back onto 4 wheels.
Okay, so it's almost like it's not a big risk reward thing, like, say, the manual in Tony Hawk 3.
Yeah. It's just ways to, like, you could jump from driving in reverse to going off of a ramp, doing an air trick, because you could do tricks in the air, landing, going right into 2 wheel, and then you come up to a turn, because they'll have some boost gauges. I'll get to those in a second. You'll see a drifting one, so you'll just start drifting around the corner, all the while just continually earning turbo to help you go faster. You could build up to 4 turbo gauges. You can either use them one at a time, or when you have a full 4-bar gauge, you double tap the X button and you go, quote, in the zone, where you just get a really, I want to say, like, 15-second turbo boost, And if you bump into anyone, they go flying.
Oh, nice. That makes it worth it in and of itself. Yeah. You can, it's like the move that you need to screw over other players.
Yeah, because if you're falling behind, you can do that and easily jump back into the game. Or if you're already out front, you can work on building up those gauges and get back in the zone and just get an even bigger lead, which I think is really cool. Those gauges that I mentioned on the track, you'll see going around corners, they'll have a whole bunch of like arrows on the ground that if you drift across all of them, not only did you get boost or earn turbo while drifting across them, but if you get all of them, you'll get another bonus to the turbo, like an extra turbo chunk added. They have it for drifting. They have it for two-wheel driving. So you'll just pop up on your two wheels and drive across the lines. And then they have it for backward driving. So there's always different ways to add even more turbo to your gauge to go faster.
I like that idea, actually. You get a lot of tricking out to do. It's not just stay on the track.
Yeah. They have battle racing, which is what you would expect out of like a Mario Kart game where there's, you know, question marks that you run over on the course and you get like rockets or machine guns or like oil slicks you can drop, mines you can drop, stuff like that. They have, I was excited about this one at first. It's called Takedown Mode, which
sounds like it's Burnout and Flight Inspired.
Yeah, my mind went right to Burnout Takedown. I'm like, oh my God, do I get to wreck into people and cause them to crash? It's not that, unfortunately. It's kind of like a battle mode where you'll run over to pick up weapons on the course, and you'll just have a bunch of dummy cars in front of you that you'll have to take out.
Oh, that's not nearly as enjoyable.
It's fun, but when I saw Takedown, I was thinking Burnout Takedown, and it is unfortunately not that. It's still fun, though.
They're going to have to go back and then, like, mod it on an update and call it, like, burn, you know, take... You know, cars cuddle crash mode or something. Like, oh, that's different. I like this.
That'd be amazing. They also have a stunt, air stunt spectacular mode. I forget the official name of it. But basically, there's a lot of emphasis on doing tricks in the air. And off the ramps, you'll also see, like, balloons in the air to give you bonus points. And it's all about getting as high of a score as you can. They have hot lap to go as fast as you can. They have... three tiers of each of the events in tournament across racing, battle racing, stunt, and takedown mode. So three levels to each of those that you can earn a tournament cup on, a championship cup. That eventually leads into mixed cups of different events instead of just a single style. And then on top of all of that, they have a playground mode that you can open up, which is just like a giant kind of sandboxy area.
There's that Infinity creeping out the back.
Kind of, or even in before Disney Infinity, Toy Story 3 had a toy box mode to it that was kind of just like do whatever you want kind of thing. And the playground mode, I forget the official name of it on here. I'm going to feel like an asshole about it. But it has, you know, a giant course that you can drive around and test out your skills. They do have rails that you can grind, but I haven't figured out how to do it.
Wait,
like I've
what?
Yeah, kind of like skateboard grinding rails. And there's collectibles that you have to get that are on these rails. I've tried like boosting and jumping onto them, and I don't know if there's a certain trick that I'm not doing right, but...
Things I've never expected to hear in a game. You got to make your car grind on this rail, right?
It's crazy, and it's a giant area, too, with 10 different fireman hats for the fire truck in the game that you have to collect through there, and then a whole bunch of different extra side events that you can do by, like, either... you know the giant ball at carnivals that you'll see motorcycle riders driving around in?
Yeah.
They'll have one of those, but you have to pop balloons inside it. Or, like, they'll have... You'll pick up weapons, and you'll have to destroy, like, explosive boxes and get X numbered to get either bronze, silver, or gold rings.
And the way you're describing this game, it sounds like it's a lot more than a typical licensing cash-in.
There's a lot to the game. The only downside is it doesn't have any kind of actual, like, campaign to it.
Yeah, but I mean, it's one of those where, like, based on how you're describing it, it has at least like the Tony Hawk environment concept towards, like, go to this level, and they give you some objectives to pull off. You can unlock different modes, and on those modes, pull off these objectives. Maybe you unlock, get close to unlocking the other cars, or I don't know.
Yeah, there it's like shallow enough for your kids to get into and have a lot of fun with, but it's deep enough for you to play it when they go to bed.
Yeah, that's the kind of game you want.
Still really enjoy it. It's legitimately a lot of fun. The car handling is great. They have multiple difficulties, so your kid could play on easy, you could play on hard and get your ass kicked. They also have a Hall of Fame, which is 130 to 150 different goals that you can accomplish in the game. That crosses all the different style of events you can do, whether it's like collecting one hat in that playground area, collecting all the hats, winning a race on a certain track, winning a battle race on a certain track, getting 3 stars in X number of events, and then any even crazy shit like air drift for 2 seconds in a race. So yes, you have to go off a jump and drift in the air.
That is nutty and also really cool sounding to have to do in a game like that. Like, it definitely sounds like a game that I'm sure a lot of parents wish their children's TV shows would mimic, where it was like, hey, good for the kids, but I want to blow my brains out at the same time.
Yeah. Warner Brothers and Avalanche could have easily just done a quick cash in, and it's like, hey, there's a new Cars movie coming out. People are going to buy this shit like crazy. And last Tuesday, I was actually at GameStop, and I was like, hey, anything cool come out today? Because it was E3 week, and nothing big really comes out during E3 week. And he's like, dude, we've had a dozen calls already for Cars 3.
That was not.
It was not even noon.
People were ready for it.
People are really looking forward to this game, and I am here to say that you are looking forward to a really solid racing game. Like I said, there's enough content there to keep you busy for a long time. The Hall of Fame and all the weird events, or not events, but like accomplishments that you can do in the game, like it really makes you work for some of them too. Like, you have to pick up a red barrel, an explosive barrel, pick it up, jump, throw it ahead of you, and hit 3 people.
Hit people in a car's cage. Cuddle them.
Well, not people, but like other cars. So you have to be behind in a race. You have to go past an area that has these red barrels that you could pick up. You have to pick one up. You have to jump and throw it and hit 3 other vehicles.
That is some technical shit right there. Kids ain't going to be pulling that off.
Kids aren't going to, but your dad might.
Exactly, which is what it's all about. And it leads to a bonding opportunity, because I can see a kid going, Dad, I can't do it. And Dad's like cracking his knuckles like, step aside, kid.
Don't worry, son. I've got this. And then 20 minutes later, this motherfucking thing.
I mean, this bad box. Pretty much, like, that's the kind of stuff I like, though. It's like, Dad! Anyway, or the kids will be like, I have nephews, like, are friends with kids, and I'm like, we're stuck on this thing. It's like, well, Uncle Perrin can come over and do it. It's like, Uncle Perrin can do it? It's like, yeah, he can. And I show up over, and I was like, you got the payment? Jokingly, but also serious.
Yeah.
Expecting to make the good of some sort. Like, where's my payment? Here you go. Let's get these green stars.
I will say, I was going into this expecting that this would be a fun rental that you pick up for like a day. That's what I did with Cars 2, the game. I rented it from Redbox. I got 1,000 achievement points overnight, and I was done with it. I have put a massive chunk of time into this, and I only have about 300 achievement points in it, and I honestly don't think I'm good enough to get 1,000 in this game with some of the accomplishments that you have to do for the Hall of Fame.
Now, that's a game right there for me, where it makes you work for your goods.
I was going into this expecting to be like, yeah, let's try it. I'll give it a try it, because it's worth checking out. You know, Redbox it for a night. This is a buy it. This is a really, really solid racing game with tons of content, tons to do. It's good for kids. It's good for people who, you know, you're a big racing fan, but you're not like in a Forza 6 mood. You just want to have a more arcade fun style racing game. And yes, it's going to keep you busy. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I give this one my stamp of approval. I give Cars 3 Driven to Win a buy it.
Thank you, Avalanche, for not releasing licensed children's-based drivel.
Yeah.
Thanks for making
a game that's significantly deeper than your last Cars game, because Cars 2 was fun, but it was over way too quick. This one, yeah, there's just so much to do in it. Again, my only gripe is I wish it had some kind of like cohesive story mode to it, but for how much content is in the game, I can't hold that against it too much, because there's still plenty to do. I guess my only other gripe is the voice acting is meh.
It's not the same people from the movie?
I don't think they got anybody from the movie.
Or they got Bob from accounting.
Yeah, pretty
much. Whoa, lightning, watch out!
I think the only recognizable name that I noticed, I may have overlooked someone because, you know, the credits were moving and I forgot to, like, stop the scroll, so I was just reading them as they went. The only name that I noticed was NASCAR racer Darrell Waltrip.
Oh.
Who serves as, like, the announcer in the game.
Well, that's still pretty cool.
But like,
blew their whole budget on him.
Maybe none of the other movie actors I could see were there. Like they had some decent sound alikes, but like Larry the Cable Guy was fucking too busy for Cars 3. Are you shitting me?
Well, he had a big plate of ribs at home that no one else was going to eat. Had to be him.
He had a Pepsid commercial he had to film instead. But yeah, minor gripes aside, Cars 3 Driven to Win was really, really fun and enjoyable, and I got to give it a buy it. So
that's what's up.
I know you wanted to hear the review, so did it meet your expectations?
Yes, it did, actually. It was a very in-depth review of a game that turned out to be awesome when I expected it to be trite.
Yeah.
Because, again, licensed products. So I feel like a lot of licensed games, especially when studios like Avalanche put their work into them, they deserve the reviews because they're the ones that need to, you know, flip people's ideas on their heads. So you know, this is not the traditional, you know, this isn't the traditional licensed game. This is one you want to own.
Yeah.
Go get it.
There's been a lot of garbage licensed games out there, but I think Avalanche has had a fairly solid track record with their releases. I can't really speak to like the Chicken Little games, but I know Bolt was pretty solid. That was an enjoyable platformer. Toy Story 3 was fantastic. Like, yeah, you might not expect to hear that from a Toy Story game, but the sandbox mode that we were talking about earlier, that's like GTA for kids.
Wow.
And
so
Toy Story 3 is playable on Xbox One, so if you're looking for a solid kids game that you could play, you know, with your kid, or you're just looking for a good palate cleanser from all the war games, Toy Story 3 was really good.
I wonder how they handle the moment when all the toys are about to die in the freaking furnace, because, man or child, that shit brought tears.
I legitimately do not remember how they handled that in the game, because I played that a couple years ago. But
they're all old. Achievement unlocked.
We killed a lot more time on Cars 3 than I expected, so let's jump on to your game. It is called Cooking Witch, developed and published by Varagt P. I struggled with this last time. They also developed Loot Hero, and then we also reviewed Plantera from them, which I thought was a solid and enjoyable clicker game. This one released May 18th on Steam for only $1.99. In Cooking Witch, you are a witch flying to a party in the woods, abducting the children and cooking and eating them. So, Pernell, tell us about Cooking Witch.
Right off the bat, I'm going to say, if you're one of the ridiculous number of people I see online that love to make sure to make it known that not only do you hate kids, but that you detest them, this is the game for you. You hate children? Buy this game. I originally came into this game with the same mindset you had about what I mentioned about with Cars. I was like, I'm probably not going to be that big a thing. It's a short pick-up-and-play game, whatever it is. But be that as it may, I had fun playing this game. I enjoyed it, and I actually laughed while I played it. The overall premise in the game as a whole is pretty simple. You are a witch. You start out, and there's like a big chalkboard that tells you what all the different children are worth as far as like points go and what items they drop. So there are multiple. These are the things you can collect in the game. Stars, which increase your time.
because the game starts out in the middle of the night and the game ends when the sun comes up. And every star you pick up reverses time a little bit so you can hunt children for longer. Then there are hearts, which will refill your health, because while you're going around and abducting children to then dump into a giant cauldron to eat, there sometimes their screams will summon out their fathers, and their fathers will come out with guns. I'm not even sure what they are. I think they're like blunderbusses. That's what they look like. But they'll come out with a blunderbuss and start shooting in the sky. So hearts will refill health if you get hit by either a blunderbuss shot or by a rocket that also can sometimes get shot and hit you. Then there is the meat. The sweet, tasty, meaty treats that everybody drops when they fall in the pot. And that is what you use to buy upgrades for your character, whether it be speed upgrades so that you fly faster. There are hooks, like fishing hooks, so you can carry more children at once. There is health upgrades. There is stamina upgrade, which allows you to hold on to children longer. And there's like one other potion that's not even sticking in my head right now. But basically, it lets you carry more weight. So, because there's multiple types of kids. There's like the green kid, the red kid, and the yellow kid. And they all have different weights, and they drop different combinations of the three things I mentioned earlier. And then the daddy, which is the gun guy, he drops, I'm not even sure what he drops, because they don't show him on the board. It's just, I just get what he gets, whatever. So, the funny thing about this is that you can't, like, you can pick up the kids by just swooping by and collecting them. But you can't collect the daddy unless you drop a kid on his head and knock him out. So you got to fly by, drop a child, it gives the dad a concussion, then you re-pick up the kid and the daddy, dunk him in the pot, get food, get fed. So basically the idea, this is the kind of game where you start out, you're pretty weak, but after each successive play, you can get money, you get meat money for upgrades, which allows you to play longer. So if once you get to the point where you completely max out your guy, you're going to be shooting for high scores and stuff like that, and there's a high score leaderboard. I'm not sure if anything else actually eventually unlocks, like maybe a new environment or anything crazy, like new enemy types or stuff like that. But I would say even if that's not the case, and I've seen everything the game has to offer already, for $2, I played for an hour, and that's easily worth $2. An hour of fun is easily worth $2. So very true. I give it a legit. I think it's a legit pickup.
So is it a legit buy it, or is it a fuck it, why not? It's only $2. Just get it.
I think it's a legit buy it, to be honest. I had genuine fun.
Cool.
Again, if you hate kids, this is a really good buy. You can tell all your friends, I was cooking children last night. Fuck them babies. And it's like, oh, wow. What kind of world are you living in? Oh, no, it's a game called Cooking, which is really, it's quite divine. I see. So I was about to call the cops on you for a second there. Oh, yeah, and after I played Cooking, which I cooked a couple kids, it was nice.
So if you hate kids, get Cooking Witch. If you have kids, get Cars 3.
Sounds about right. If you have kids, but you hate them, get them both.
There you go. Well, Purnell, thanks as always for covering the game. And I know you'll be back on again soon because you're covering even more stuff for us. Any final words to wrap it up?
Nope. Just if you're cooking kids, keep it on the down low, because you really are supposed to do that.
Next game to talk about is called Randall, developed and published by We The Force Studios. It released June 6th on PS4 and Steam for $14.99. In a dystopian world that doesn't seem like a departure from our own future, people are content living under constant surveillance and absolute control. Players take on the part of Randall, a powerful telepath with a touch of schizophrenia. We had our friend Tom Miller on the case for this one. Tom, welcome back to the show.
Hey. Good to be back.
How's it going?
I've been doing okay. I played this game for most of the morning, and my sanity's relatively intact. but I'm doing all right, and I'm actually looking at the preview screenshots on Steam right now. I was playing it on PS4, but one of them is of one of the... Oh, actually, one of them is of the boss that caused me to rage quit, so...
Oh, nice. So tell us about Randall. What is this game?
So, Randall is... it builds itself as a Metroidvania. It is an exploration-based platformer where you get different abilities that allow you to access different parts of the world. And So it has that going on. I love that kind of game. It's one of my favorite genres. I feel like it tries to mix in stuff from a bunch of different genres as well. It has some sort of a Super Meat Boy-ish platforming segments to it. It has some more beat-em-up parts. It has almost like almost like a Deus Ex like body modification thing going on, where you can get new psychic abilities that you can use in battle. So it has a ton of stuff going on. I feel like maybe that was also kind of one of my complaints with it, because like it tried to do so much that a lot of it didn't, I think, do particularly well.
One of those jack of all trades, master of none kind of deals.
Yeah, exactly. Like the beat 'em up things. Like I got through a great deal of the game by doing the same like three hit punch combo, and you can just kind of spam it. So it's a little bit on the simplistic side. But there are things that it does do well. I think, it's really pretty to look at. There's a lot of variation for it being like dystopian sci-fi future world. There's a lot of different, environments that are really well done, I think. And, you know, there are, like, you go through a factory, you're in, like, the catacombs, and you have, like, a ruined city and stuff, and it's all pretty dark, but it manages to still be pretty colorful and nice to look at.
I'm going through the screenshots. It looks really nice visually.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Nice cartoon style to it. And there are all these, like,
over-the-top, like, propaganda posters in the background, too, that are a nice touch.
Telling you to smile.
Yeah, exactly. It does have a lot. And actually, you know, one thing that a mechanic that I really did enjoy, midway through the game, you get the ability to possess enemies, and you can kind of like take control of them and either use them to fight other enemies, or some of them have different abilities. Like one of them, you can flip upside down and walk on ceilings, and that gets used a lot in puzzles and things. So that's what I liked about the game. It has all that going for it. It's really buggy, I found, which is kind of the on the opposite end. Like one time I died and then I respawned in a wall. Actually, more than once that happened.
Oh wow!
One time I got to a boss and the boss just didn't show up, and so I just had to restart the game. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like I've been looking at the community hub for it on Steam, and also on the developer's website. And it looks like they are, you know, aware of a lot of the stuff that's going on and are pretty active with the community. It's a pretty small community, but like, I think they are working to improve it. So it might be worth it.
Which I think says a lot, that the developers are aware that there's issues and they care, that they're trying to fix it and make it a better product.
Yeah, for sure. The translation is really rough. I think the developer is based in Colombia, and it kind of shows. There's a lot of really rough English. And actually, that was another thing. There were people who were asking about doing a localization, a better translation into English. So, but it did kind of, because it does try to go for like the really like sort of snappy dialogue, like snappy sci-fi dialogue, and it kind of falls flat because of that. But again, hopefully that does get fixed in the future, because it could be pretty entertaining in that way. So I mentioned that I rage quit. There is, for the most part, I was saying you can kind of spam a three button combo pretty easily through it, and then there's the bosses are a completely different story. They usually end up one-shotting you, and they tend to have a lot of like waiting around for the boss to be vulnerable, and that kind of boss design I've never been a fan of. If we're gonna go for like the Super Meat Boy analogy, because I think that is kind of one of the biggest inspirations for it, I figure most people have probably played Super Meat Boy at this point. Or who are going to. There's a boss about two-thirds of the way in, the meat golem, that's basically just like waiting for it to kill itself while you have to dodge it, and the attacks are really hard to see coming unless you know what's going to happen, and then it's super easy. So that, like, two of the three bosses that I fought were basically that, except I think even more so, maybe. but, you know, so, I don't know. The other one was fun, though. So, you know, it's kind of a mixed bag. And I'll probably end up coming back to it and finishing it, because it does have enough cool ideas to it that, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know if I'd particularly recommend it at this point, but... But yeah, you know, it has a lot going for it for sure.
So if they were to put in the time to fix up the bugs and whatnot for $15, do you think it's a worthwhile playthrough at least?
I don't know. I kind of don't think so. You know, it just has a lot of stuff going wrong with it that just kind of makes it not all that enjoyable a lot of the time to me. But again, like, there are some just really cool ideas. And yeah, actually, you know, I think if they do continue to improve it, it will get to the point where it is, it will be worthwhile. It honestly kind of feels like a beta right now. It feels like it's not fully done, so...
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully they continue to polish it and turn it around. Hopefully, it's
yeah,
never
I
fun
mean,
to see a game come out and we're like, eh.
Yeah, I know it's really it was kind of a bummer, but you know, like it's gotten patched since I downloaded it, so like I know they're actively working on it. So,
which I'm very happy about, because it's always good when they're showing that they care.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if things change and if there's a big patch or anything that changes things significantly, you'll have to let us know and keep us informed.
Yeah, well, definitely. I will be keeping an eye on it, because it has some potential to be really cool.
All right. Sounds good. Any final thoughts to wrap it up?
That fire guy is a jerk. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. Yeah, anyway, that was where I was at.
Next game to talk about is called Air Guitar Warrior Gamepad Edition. This was developed and published by Virtual Air Guitar Company. It released June 15th on Xbox One for $14.99. It will eventually be free for owners of the original Air Guitar Warrior for Kinect. I'm not sure what the timeline is on that. Talked with the guys at Virtual Air Guitar, and they said hopefully within a month or so. Air Guitar Warrior is part scrolling shooter, part music game, and full of rock attitude, and you control the music. Shoot bullets, lasers, and lightning from your air guitar. Ride dinosaurs, sharks, and jet-powered crocodiles. Smash Vikings, aliens, demons, and flying skulls. Find the legendary sword guitar and challenge heavy metal Zeus for the top spot in the Temple of the Rock Gods. Joining us, special guest joining us for this one, it's nice of you to show up, CJ. you missed, yeah. Purnell. He was here before. You missed him.
Oh, well, I think I'll live.
So, I covered the original Air Guitar Warrior, because this was originally a Kinect game, and I covered it on there. It has been reformulated, I guess, for gamepad instead of needing the Kinect, and you covered this one. So what are your thoughts on this?
Well, as for the game itself, which is it's the same idea of the game. It's simply riding weird creatures throughout each level while pressing buttons instead to use your attacks. Like, I am assuming the way it worked with the original version is that you actually had to like strum.
Yes.
And
in time to the music, rhythm,
yeah.
Rhythmically strumming, jinga, jinga, or chicka, 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 chicka.
Yeah, depending on how fast you want to go.
Yeah.
Or, well, which type of bullets you wanted to use, because there's the slow bullets and then the fast ones. And in this game, instead of strumming using the Kinect, because obviously it's not a Kinect game, you use the A and X button, and then depending on the speed that you tap those buttons, that's what attack you'll do. So, like, the slow lead, I believe, is the A button, but slowly into the beat. And then the fast lead is rapidly tapping the A button. And then the same works for the X attacks, which I don't remember which ones those are called. I think those are the rhythm attacks, maybe. I don't know what the other one's called. I know that the lead is one of them, but I don't know. I don't know that much about music to know what the fuck the other one's called.
Did it control well? Did it feel like it worked well with using a controller instead of strumming?
Yeah, I felt like it was actually a really good idea. I do feel like the game was made quite a bit easier, and I think that is shown by the TA, like on TA, just the amount of people that have completed this version versus the other version. I feel like the gamepad actually makes this game very, very easy. I don't know if they just didn't like change up the way enemies worked in the game, so it was like it's going to be a little more challenging using the Kinect because it's like that was designed for the Kinect, and it was supposed to be a little bit challenging there and here. Without that same design, but still the same layout, it just feels like it was very, very easy. Still, I mean, I won't complain. The music was really good. I like the background tracks that go along, and then it each time you strum, it gives like a different kind of I don't know, foreground music that goes with the background.
Yeah,
and it sounds pretty good, and it manages to combine pretty well no matter what kind of attack you're doing. And each guitar actually has different attacks, which all sound different too, which I thought was really neat.
Yeah, I know it still works where every stage of beat unlocks a new guitar, right?
For the most part. There were two stages, I believe, that when you beat it, you don't get a new guitar from it. But yeah, for the most part, each stage you beat gets you a new guitar. And eventually you will unlock this like legend guitar, which is just a customizable guitar that lets you choose the attacks you want.
Nice.
Instead of like all the other ones are set up with all the same type of attacks or just like all of them are the same element. Like you have an ice guitar and a spectral guitar, and all of the attacks kind of have that same theme. But with the Legend Sword, you're able to mix and match the attacks that you like the most from each guitar and make a very powerful guitar that works the same way as those attacks you like. So you can have like an ice attack that freezes enemy by slowly tapping A while also combining that with the rapid lightning that shoots out of the electric guitar with the fast tapping of the X button. And so that's just kind of a little neat thing. I didn't really know what the legendary guitar was at first. I thought that it was just going to be an uber powerful one, but it turned out to just be like a customizable guitar. But that's I still think that was pretty cool. Yeah. I like being able to use the rapid tapping of the X to use the lightning because I feel like that was the most powerful.
Yeah, so I'm curious to know with the Kinect version, because the screen basically mirrors you. The game for most people, since so many people are right-handed, it scrolled to the left instead of to the right. Did they flip it for this, or are you still scrolling to the left?
Fuck.
Which side of the screen was your character on?
The character was on the left side.
I believe they did flip it
to the right. Yes.
That's pretty neat. It's like a whole new game then.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I can see what you're talking about now because, yeah, you would... The way your guitar would be facing or sticking out to that point. Yeah,
for right-handers, you would be aiming to the left and moving to the left because...
That makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. And I know...
Yeah, no,
I know
in this game, you're just aiming to the right.
Okay, that's pretty neat. I'll have to... My free copy didn't pop up in my... ready to install yet, so I didn't get a chance to try this. I might just buy it for $15 because I enjoyed the original version. I actually went back and tried the Kinect version again, and I know they updated it with like the Zeus battle that's in the gamepad version was added to the Kinect as well, so that's pretty neat.
Oh, that wasn't in the original?
Nope.
That level, I'll say that right now, that level was probably the most son of a bitch level. Because it's just like, when does it end? You think you finish it, and then nope, there's more. And it just keeps going. And all the bosses, you're on a timer. So it's like, if you don't beat the boss within that time, you just die, and you have to restart. And so it was like a pain in the fucking ass to do that level.
And then for people, for people wondering if this means Virtual Air Guitar is stepping away from Kinect, I actually I hit up Aki at Virtual Air Guitar Company, and I asked him, wondering if they're moving on from Kinect or if the gamepad is going to be like the future of what they do. And he replied back, as mentioned in the release, this is us expanding, not moving on. We're still doing Kinect games, but we're also trying other things too. There's one Kinect project currently in the works. We have plans for plenty more, of course, but always one step at a time. For now, this is a one-off. While we didn't originally plan on a gamepad edition, the idea came during development of the Kinect version. As the content started taking shape, we saw that we had a game with cool art, great attitude, and a killer soundtrack, none of which were dependent on the Kinect, so we started of thinking of a way to bring all those things to a wider audience by swapping out the core game mechanics, but we didn't want to compromise the Kinect version, so they finished that one first, and then they made this a completely separate release, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I definitely think that it was cool that they put it over to just regular users that don't have a Kinect, because let's face it, I think the Kinect is probably the most unpopular accessory, especially now that you don't have to own a Kinect to own the Xbox One. I don't think that many Xbox One owners nowadays buy Kinects to have them.
Probably like, not.
Most of the people that have Kinects probably got the Kinect when it came with the system.
Hear that, or they got it when it was like $20 at GameStop.
Yeah, it has been cheap before. I think that this was a really neat idea, though, and adding controller support was awesome for many gamers, especially like even people that like me that have a Kinect but just don't have the room to actually utilize it for a game. It's like, this is cool to be able to still play the game and enjoy it. I think $15 does feel a little bit much considering how short it is, but it's not bad. So I think I have to give it like a, or it's, I don't want to say not bad, because that's like, that makes it seem like it could have been bad. It's a good game. It's a good game. It's a solid title. It's just, I don't know if it's worth $15 considering its length. It took around 3 hours to beat it and get every achievement. So if you're not an achievement hunter and grinding your way to rank 30, it'll probably only take like 2.5 hours. So it's a little bit short for the price.
Do you think this might encourage someone who has a Kinect but hasn't grabbed the Kinect version to give it a try?
I don't know. It seems like once you've experienced it once, you don't really need to go back and do it on the Kinect as well, because it's still the same game in the end. It might be interesting to check it out and see what the difference is, but I don't think it'll be worth the price of buying a Kinect to do it.
Yeah.
And then it's not like it's an update to the game or just another version that comes with it. Like, eventually, I get that it's nice that they're going to give it free to Kinect version owners, but I think it would have been cooler if it was just a bundled item that's like both, one purchase gets you both, no matter which one you wanted to buy.
Yeah.
Because it does feel like, why would you want to buy it for Kinect and gamepad separately? Just going to cost a lot more.
It's possible that the development time on converting it over to controller and how much of the code needed to be updated or changed, that it was just easier to do a completely separate release instead of an update or an addition or anything like that.
Perhaps, but either way, it does hinder it a little bit that it, because what was the Kinect version, like $20?
Or was it the same price? It might have been the same. I'm not sure. I'll have to look it up.
Yeah, it's the same. It's $14. So that's like $30 to get both versions. That doesn't feel worth it at all. But for $15 as it stands, I'd have to give it a recommend to try it. I do think that it's a really fun game, but I think its price is a little high for the content in it.
It looks like the Kinect version was originally $20, but it seemed to just completely drop in price down to $15.
I thought so. I really thought that the game originally launched at $20. Also, from the game update, like on the, you know how some games use the feed on Xbox to update what's going on?
Yeah.
It did say that anybody that bought the game, the Kinect version, before the 15th of June would get it for free.
Yeah. So I asked when that would happen, and Aki said, I'm told it will take no more than 30 days. I guess it could be sooner. So I'm not sure if it's something where they're going to, like, send out a redemption key for it, or if they're just going to, like, credit it to your account, or how they're going to handle it.
I have no idea, but that does leave you with, if you were planning on buying it now while it was $15 and then getting both versions, that's not going to work now. It's a little late.
Yeah.
You had to buy it before the gamepad version released, which is kind of a shame.
Well, they did give a solid week of heads up, because it was announced on the 8th that the game was coming out and that original purchasers would get it for free. So there was a week heads up to, like, hey, if you're interested, get them both.
Yeah. But, like I said, it's a recommended try, which is still a really high rating for us.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like I'm throwing shade at the game.
I think it's cool to see Virtual Air Guitar doing a controlled game, and to see how well it does. I'm curious to see how gamers react to Virtual Air Guitar in a non-Kinect format.
Yeah, I mean, I think more people will be able to enjoy it because of it. Like, already on True Achievements, there's more owners of the gamepad version than the Kinect version. And the Kinect version's been out since March 29th. So, it really goes to show just how many more people don't own Kinects.
All right, well, I guess that's it for that one. And you're going to scurry away back towards post-work food?
Yeah, probably. I don't know.
Cool. So I'll let you go, and I guess I'll talk to you on Thursday.
See ya.
All right, and finally tonight, we have two more reviews, and joining us for these is our good friend Cole Martin is back. Cole, how are you doing?
I'm pretty good, thank you.
That's it? Just pretty good?
Well, I mean, I woke up not dead, so I don't really have a reason to complain.
True.
I'm overly optimistic for my own good.
Baby steps, right?
Yeah. Like, you wake up when you have to, where I have rheumatoid arthritis, if you wake up and you're not dead with RA, you're like, yeah! So, fuck yeah, let's go!
Indeed. So, we didn't have you on since E3, so I gotta know, what were your thoughts on E3?
I want to touch everything! If I had money, I'd say shut up and take my money, but I don't have money, so I'm good in that regard.
Anything in particular catch your eye? Anything you're super excited about, or anything that you're pissed about? Or
I was thrilled to see more State of Decay 2. I was hoping to see, like, some more gameplay of it. If there was any of that, I missed it. But I'm happy with every little glimpse of State of Decay 2 that I can get. I was surprised by Ori 2. Like, that's one of those, you know, it's coming, but you're still surprised. You're like, ah, we're ready! Rivals of Aether getting Ori was a surprise.
That was pretty awesome, I thought.
That was just snuck in there at the end. If you weren't watching it, the daily briefings, you missed that one. Oh yeah, by the way, there's this little thing called the Xbox One X. Did you hear that?
Tell me more. I am intrigued.
I want one.
Now, do you have a 4K TV, or are you planning to get one?
I don't. Well, here's the thing. All of that's like half of a month's income for me. So if maybe like tax time, then I could be good and maybe upgrade and get a 4K TV and an Xbox One X. Otherwise, like, is it crude to set up a GoFundMe for Xbox? Can you do that?
I don't know. I did it for a VR, so.
I saw somebody set up one for a sandwich. They wanted like a Jimmy John's, whatever the fuck that is. Yeah, and I was like, okie dokie. You know, so I don't judge.
Yeah, we did it on the show for the PSVR, but that was kind of for the show, not just to have.
Yeah, that benefits your, that would be like if you were using Patreon or something to me. That's a little different. I don't do any cool shit like that, so I'm just here.
I would start a Patreon, but I don't think I would get anyone to really fucking donate anything.
But even if you only got $1 a month, it'd be $1 more than you had.
True, I guess.
See, there's that optimism.
Put it towards getting a new PC or something.
Indeed. You'd be like, look, I got $12 at the end of the year. That's half of a new motherboard if I buy a cheap one. I don't know.
I don't know either. I don't do PC shit. I have no idea. So anyway, reviews, you got two of them for us, and let us kick things off with Tour de France 2017, developed by Cyanide Studio, published by Focus Home Interactive. It released June 15th on Xbox One and PS4 for $49.99. Experience all the passion of Le Tour de France and conquer the coveted yellow jersey. Plays the greatest riders on the gorgeous roads of Le Grand Boucle?
Don't ask me.
Attack, give orders to your teammates, choose the best trajectory, manage your stamina, and make the right decisions to lead your team all the way to the top. I covered this one last year, fittingly titled Tour de France 2016.
Imagine that.
And I legitimately enjoyed what was there. I could recognize that it's definitely not a game for everyone. Like, this is not a mass market kind of title, but I recognize the depth that was there. The fact that you can't just charge to the front constantly. You need to pace yourself. You need to manage your resources. It's a very strategy heavy game, which surprised me. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this year's version.
Well, you might be surprised, but mine are pretty similar to yours. So we're done now. Okay, bye. No, in all reality, what you said still holds true. It's one of those games, I don't do sports games. I can't. I just, there's something I try. I could play racing games, but even after a while, I'm like, okay, I went in a circle so many times. Next. But I can recognize that Tour de, is he supposed to now pronounce it Tour de France or Tour de France? Yeah, I feel like it's France. Why is it fancy?
I think officially it would be Tour de France, but we're American, okay. So it's Tour de France.
It's whatever I feel like right now. That's what happens when you get a redneck to review things. Sorry, guys. Anyway, Tour de France. You can still recognize that it's a good quality game, even if it's not something that stands out as being your particular style. And so that's how I've kind of approached this, even though racing games and these hyper-management sim-type games aren't really my forte, if you will. Did I pronounce that right? What is wrong with my pronunciation tonight?
It's not my 40. Yeah,
who knows? I can spell it. I can't pronounce it. You know, even if it's not my thing, I can still look at it and go, this was incredibly well done. There's a lot of thought and a lot of content here. There's three different game modes. For instance, you can play pro team, where you actually have to manage the other players on your team. You have to give them directions, tell them whether to slow down or to go faster or to not use as much stamina now or to sprint here. You know, it's complicated. If you're really into that hardcore strategy and manipulating and really paying attention to all the fine details, this is the kind of game you're going to want to look at, even if you wouldn't think so. I mean, everybody said Tour de France, and I was like, okay, pull the trigger, watch him pedal down the road.
See, I thought that last that year. I thought that last year, and I went like an entire race where I was at the front of the pack for like the whole thing. And in the last mile or something, as we're going through the streets towards the end, I just kept falling back and back and back because I had no more reserves left in terms of like the stamina replenishing goo that you get. I don't know what the fuck it is.
They should sell that stuff though in like at Walmart near the baby diapers and formula. Like, if that stuff is real, I want to know why it's not available to moms.
But I didn't plan ahead at all. I was just like, oh, well, it's a racing game, so if I'm in front the whole time, I'm going to be fine. And I completely shit the bed in the last mile, and I finished, I think, dead last.
I did the same thing. I kind of got aware about midway through that, oh, shit, I'm kind of overdoing it. And so I started to use the follow mechanic where you can kind of press X and hold it, and you'll stay in behind somebody and do the same thing they're doing. And so that helps, like, replenish your stamina and your energy and all that. And so I was doing really good, and I was keeping myself, I was like, look, as long as I stay with the front group, I can break out and get ahead and win at the end. No. I did that shit, and I still got within a kilometer of the finish line, and I went from being in third to being 197th.
Nice.
Everything.
You have followed in my footsteps admirably.
And I was like, that was not okay. I still ended up finishing. I don't understand sports, so I don't know the proper terms. Somebody's going to be like, you're going to get hate mail for letting me review this. I'm sorry. But you know how, like, you try to get the points for the jerseys for, like, you know, doing the sprints and stuff, and being first at the end of the little sprint section gets you points for that. Yeah. I still managed, even though I was at 197th in the race as a whole, I still managed to come in third.
Oh, wow.
I don't know what I did. So I lost and I won simultaneously. I'm not sure. I'm not sure the mechanics of that. Somebody who's actually good at these games could probably figure out why that shit happened. I feel like it should have been an achievement. I'm a little disappointed that, you know, simultaneous winning and losing was not. And then I think that may be because I'm the only dumbass that could pull something like that off.
what did you think of the visuals? Because I, looking at the screenshots of this year's game, while they're not like remarkably amazing graphics, I think that it's a significant step up from last year. It looks, you know, it looks like there's more foliage on the trees, textures look better, the roads look better. So I'm curious what you thought.
I was a little surprised by the draw distance, like just how far out it would actually go ahead of you. I wouldn't expect it in that. Like, it's a little more subdued. The further it gets out, there's not as much detail. There's like, oh, there's some trees right by the road, and then there's nothing a couple hundred feet off. But I was also surprised how large the crowds were.
Yeah. Like,
that took some effort to create crowds of that size, because you, I don't know if normal people think about it, but you kind of think of like all the pixels and all the code that goes into creating minor things, and you realize that even just one little person jumping up and down waving a flag is kind of taking up a lot of space.
Yeah.
And so when you get to look at, and there's some of these areas where there are large crowds in the town sections. And even as you get out, there may not be as large of a crowd, but there'll be other details like, oh, it's a smaller group, but they have a minivan instead of a regular car sitting beside of them, where they didn't drive a car because, you know, it was too many people, they drove a van. And that kind of detail, it doesn't go unnoticed. As far as, like, the foliage and stuff, though, I didn't play last year's, so I don't have that kind of...
You don't have the whole collection? What?
Surprise!
Looking back, it's amazing how long Cyanide have been doing Tour de France games, because there's a handful on 360 back on Xbox Live Arcade, and then they went from arcade titles to full-on retail titles. A lot of those never came to America, but they are over in Europe, and now with the past 2 years, full retail on Xbox One, and it's admirable to see them continue doing it, and there's definitely have to be a market there if they're still putting these games out.
True. And I'm a little surprised by Cyanide Studios, because I feel like they should be making horror games. They're not, so there's, you know, another surprise from this. But in all reality, it's a full-fledged title, and it's really well done for what it is. I can acknowledge that, even if I'm not like, oh my god, this one's so fun. But it was surprisingly pretty. And, you know, if you can manage everything, and you know what you're actually looking at on that HUD, you're going to be probably pretty happy with it.
So overall,
they've taken their experience. They've done well with it.
So overall, for $50, what are your thoughts?
I gave it a pretty, you know, a try. It's obviously niche. It's obviously something that not everybody's going to jump out for. But if you like the whole micromanaging of a team and you can, you know, not blow up within the first kilometer of the race, you're probably going to have a lot of fun with this.
Nice. I love looking through the Wikipedia for Cyanide, and it's like, let's see, let's go through their games here. Pro Cycling Manager 2006, Horse Racing Manager, Dungeon Party. Pro Cycling Manager.
These guys didn't do Horse Racing 2016, though, right?
No.
Okay.
Pro Cycling Manager Season 2007, Pro Cycling Season 2007, Loki Heroes of Mythology.
That kind of escalated quickly.
They alternate between like cycling and cycling management sims with stuff like Blood Bowl, Styx. I know they're the guys working on Call of Cthulhu coming out. It's so weird how they just bounce back and forth from like
That's
sim
like
to
how, the farming simulator devs are making that Dead Alliance. Is that what it's called?
I'm not too sure.
Yeah, it's like a zombie shooter that's coming out. It's made by the Farming Sim guys. So you're like, well, that, you know, took a sharp turn there.
What are they? Giant Software? Let's see.
Yeah.
Games. Farming Sim. Farming Sim. Farming Sim. Farming Sim. Demolition Company. I'm not seeing anything else. Huh.
Not out yet. It's just in development. So. Mm. I said, look up Dead Alliance. I think that's what it's called.
Dead Alliance.
Mm-hmm.
This does not look like it's from Giants.
Hmm.
Developed by PsyOp Games and Illphonic.
No, Illphonic did something else recently, too, but no. There is one being made by the Farming Sim guy, because I remember I saw it, and it was a shooter, and I was like, oh, and it said, from Giant, and I went, huh? But now I don't remember who it is, because that's what I do. But now I'm going to have to go Google it.
Yeah, you'll have to fill us in.
I'm on the case. I'm on all cases.
That's your homework. Oh, and then that Dead Alliance is being published by Maximum Games, so that's pretty cool, too.
That's familiar, and I don't remember what else they've done. I don't know. Don't
Maximum?
Ask me. Yeah.
They did, like, Mark McMorris, Infinite Air, Alakine's Gun, Loading Human, oh, okay. Lictum Battle Mage, stuff like that.
Okay.
The Golf Club.
Oh, Lord.
But, yeah, so... Tour de France, if you're a fan of the series, it looks like another solid entry. If you're not a fan of the series, who knows? You might enjoy stepping out of your comfort zone.
You might be. I was surprised. I was like, okay, this wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
And that's the same way I felt last year. Like, well, I didn't expect to enjoy this as much as I did. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. The last game that we're covering tonight is called, I'm sure you're excited about this one, The Town of Light. Developed by LKAIT, published by Wired Productions, released June 6th on Xbox One, PS4, and Steam for $19.99. The Town of Light is a psychological adventure told in the first person. The story is set in Italy in the first half of the 20th century, in a place which really existed and has been meticulously reconstructed. Exploring and interacting with the environment, you will relive the history of the main character through her confused viewpoint, and on the basis of your choices, the story will develop in different ways. As much as I stumbled through reading that, I'm sure you have plenty to say about the game, yes?
I love this game. So this is one of those... walk exploration type games. I like that much better than walking sim. So now that it's been a couple days since I've played it, your job is to uncover the truth about a girl named Renee T, who was dropped off at an insane asylum in Italy in the 40s. And she was 16 years old at the time of being left in the asylum. And as you explore the asylum, you uncover details about Renee's past life before she was there, and also what it was like for her once she was there. And it's up to you to kind of determine what you find, how much of it is truthful, how much of it is distorted by Renee's mental impairments, and how much is it of it was lies or cover-ups to hide what had actually happened to her. So there's, depending on your reactions and what you uncover, that dictates how the story ends up. So you go through the first 5 chapters, and it's pretty linear in that regard. But once you get to chapter 5, this is where your decisions start to affect things. And the chapter, actually, the next chapter breaks off. There's a 6A and a 6B. So there are 2 outcomes to what happens to you between chapters 1 through 5. Then you take your path from whether you end up in 6A or 6B affects what you see for the rest of the story. From that point, then, as you progress finding the collectibles and finding, the details and uncovering clues and responding to the events that have happened to Renee, you then end up at chapter 12, where it branches out to 12A, 12B, 12C, or 12D.
Oh, wow.
So there are a pretty wide spectrum of possibilities for how the story goes. And unfortunately, regardless of what you choose, you will come up to the same ending. But how you feel about that ending is modified by what information you receive throughout the story, if that makes sense. So whether or not it seems like it's as severe of a result is kind of up to you. How you want to interpret that end is up to you based on what you uncovered in your journey to get to that end. So even though the ending remains the same, it's on you as to how it's. And so it can be different. If I got information that something Renee tells you occurred, and then you find a piece of information that says, maybe from the hospital, that says it happened a different way, do you believe Renee or do you believe the hospital? Obviously, Renee can't always be trusted. She is mentally ill, but hospitals cover shit up too, you know?
Yeah.
And so who is really in the right here, you know, or who was the real protagonist, who is the real antagonist? Is there even a real protagonist and antagonist? It's all that all falls to you. And so that leaves a lot of room for the game to leave you pretty emotionally raw. And depending on how you look at that outcome, you can, for me personally, I was kind of, what's a good word for it? Not necessarily taken aback, but it isn't severe enough, you know? Like, I was kind of taken aback, but it just haunted me. Like, I went to bed that night contemplating, and I wasn't even done with the story at one point. And I went to bed and I was contemplating, I was like, is what I'm being told in this game true? Is the what I'm being given the actual reality of the game? Or is something else going to happen? And I even said when I was playing, I said to my husband, I said, I don't know if what's happening in the game is happening because of the decisions I've made or because that's what was supposed to happen. Like, did I perceive it that way because of decisions I made? So that's how it just, it's the psychological thrill of it there's no jump scares. There's nothing to haunt you. There's no ghosts. It's just, it's all on you. And that kind of freedom for your mind lets it play tricks on you. And the Town of Light does an exceptional job with that. It just, it plays on every little pinprick emotion.
That sounds pretty good.
Yes, and it's, they said that they did meticulous detail on the asylum. I can't pronounce the name to save myself, and I'm sorry for that.
Welcome to my life with this show.
Yeah, it's Italian. It's Italian. And that was another really neat detail. All of the documents you find are in Italian. Everything. There's subtitles, and she will read them out in English, but everything is in Italian. Renee's journal is the only thing that is in English.
Hmm.
So everything else is Italian. I think one of the other things that kind of makes it all a little more raw is that the main character in the story, at the time of her being admitted to the hospital, she's only 16, and at that time, 16 was more likely to be considered an adult. There's even a mention of her being a housewife. It's hard, though, in this day and time to hear a 16-year-old housewife and not go, you know.
Pervert.
And, well, yeah, exactly. And it's kind of important to put the warning out there that there are really terrible things that happened to this girl, both inside the hospital and out of it. And so if somebody has, you know, issues with rape or abuse and things in that regard, they need to keep that in mind before they decide to play this game, because it could conjure up some pretty harsh shit. And again, that's where I was like, did that happen because I fucked up? Or is the game lying to me that that happened? It's really harsh to, like, specifically choke it down, especially when you realize she was put through some pretty terrible surgeries and what have you. And it's all things that legitimately happened, especially to women in asylums at that time period, and that reality of it kind of will hang over you like a cloud when you're playing, because you'll find notes and it'll be like reasons for admission, and you realize that being a nymphomaniac pleasuring yourself or mood swings and female hysteria, these kind of things are all listed, you know, not bonding with children, no desires to be a mother. These were things that we put women in mental hospitals for at that time. And now we think, well, that's insane. We would never put somebody in the hospital for just not wanting kids. But we did at one point. And that realization that it's a game, yeah, but it's so rooted in history and reality for that. It's dark and it can kind of haunt you.
I love that anytime there's a game involving like horrible shit being done to kids, you're the one covering it for us.
I do just repeatedly get stuck with the horrible things. And I think too, Mike, I told you at one point that I could handle pretty much anything as long as it didn't involve kids. And now I'm up to like 8 that have involved horrible child brutalities.
Oh, but, man.
I mean, it's a little easier to choke on, at least with Town of Light, given that she is older and more, you know, the older teen years. But because of her mental state, it's also a little harder because she doesn't understand. She might be 16 physically, but she's definitely not 16 mentally.
Yeah.
So it's creepy, but you will do far more to creep your own self out with it mentally than the game does to you on its own.
So
I want to throw in too. I'm going to cut you off. 1 second.
Okay.
I'm not done. When you finish the game, there's this beautiful song that plays. I say beautiful. It's hauntingly beautiful. It's incredibly sad, but it's so well done. It plays at the beginning and during the credits, and it's kind of like the main theme for the game. When you beat the game, you actually get to watch a little music video for that song. And there is an actress who replays out what Renee has gone through in that music video along, and it's cut in with where they've taken video of the Sane Asylum in its current state. And kind of patched the past and present together. And it's really well done. It's a nice little touch that you get for beating the game. But it made me cry.
So, tears, child abuse, and all for $20. What are your thoughts on this one?
I say buy it. I do. It's beautifully well done. The attention to detail is just amazing. As you progress through, the asylum changes from what Renee remembers it as to its current state, where it's, you know, disheveled and there's broken walls and the roof has collapsed. And as you progress through, you see that kind of destruction happening in the story as well. And it's just the nuance and everything. It's really well done.
Nice. So it sounds like between Town of Light and Victor Vran, June 6th was an awesome day for Wired Productions.
Were they responsible for Victor Vran too?
Yep, they published that one.
Nice.
That was a two pack, same day, a 1-2 combo.
I haven't played Victor Vran, but
it's so good.
Because I can't do anything but play Town of Light. So.
Well, if you pick up Victor Vran, which I very much recommend, let me know and I'll play with you.
Cool.
If you're a fan of dungeon crawler like Diablo style games.
I've never played Diablo.
You haven't played Diablo. Are you not familiar with our show's history?
No. I'm guilty. There's a lot of games that I missed when I was like in my late teens that were all really awesome, but it was just in my I'm not a gamer right now phase.
Well, good for you. Diablo 3 is available on the Xbox One.
Is there a new one coming? Did I see something for Diablo or was it something else?
There's a new character coming soon, eventually.
Oh, that must have been it. So, I've heard other people say good things about it, but...
Yeah, you should play Diablo 3.
I will
I'll have to get Chris on to yell at you for not playing Diablo. But, what was that?
I said I'm sorry.
I just heard a beep like a phone hung up or something.
Did it?
Yeah,
that was not on my end.
That was weird.
I got all my notifications and stuff turned off this time. I was good.
No, it sounded like an old cordless phone, not a cell phone,
yeah? But
like a cordless phone where you would hit the button and beep. It was, I don't know.
Maybe I hit the button with my face because I'm
Nah, I don't know. Anyway, that is it for this episode. A lot of reviews, a lot of E3 chattery. I don't know. I'm getting bad at ending these shows. Especially
you mean
the ones
we're
I have
good
to
at one point.
Especially the ones where I have to like splice a bunch of shit together just because that feeling of cohesion is gone. So I didn't actually just talk for an hour and a half. It was like split up over a couple of different recordings. Yay. So Cole, I will leave it to you. Do you have any final words to end the show?
Play all the games, especially Town of Light, though.
And Diablo.